apologize that we started 5 minutes late, but I was just allowing members to come. And as we are aware that members are sitting in different committees, there will be other members who will be joining us. You know, time, when we deal with time, I really need people who obey and respect time. This is why I see it very necessary that we shouldn't just take it that we are late with 5 minutes. 5 minutes of it counts a lot. On that note, I'm just going to request members to introduce themselves and move to the department to introduce and the acting DG. I think you'll lead the introduction of your delegation. Honorable members.
Good morning. My name is Willem Faber. I'm a member of this committee and I represent the Northern Cape province. Thank you.
Hi, good morning. My name is Lydia Mshodi, First State Province. Thanks.
Salmanan Lanke Ikamala Mwusiswe Mwobe Mere Echauteng.
Good morning. Good morning, Chairperson. My name is Zokiso Ranto. I'm a member of this committee. I'm from Eastern Cape. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Let me first begin by apologizing for my minister. He is in cabinet. And also the deputy minister is in the provincial office. My name is Veliswa Baduza. I'm the acting director general of the Department of Arts and Culture. On my left, I've got Dr. Mulelo Jokweni. Dr. Mulelo Jokweni is a chief director in language services, but he's the acting deputy director general for two branches in the department. On my immediate right, I've got Professor Nkondo. Professor Nkondo is the chairperson of the National Library Board, but is also the chairperson of the Transformation Charter Technical Team. He will be presenting to the Select Committee on the Transformation Charter. Next to Professor Nkondo, I've got Ukuleng Kekana. Buleng Kekana is the Director of Library Policy and Coordination in the department. Next to Buleng, I've got Mr. John Tsebe. Mr. Tsebe is the National Librarian. Mr. John Tsebe. Next to Mr. Tsebe, I've got Mandla Machumuza. I can't call him Mr. because he's young. Mr. Machumuza is the head of the center. Mr. Machumuza is the head for the center for the blind, for the book, center for the book. Next to Mr. Machumuza, I've got Lisa Combrink. Lisa Combrink is a chief director of communication. Next to Ulisa, I've got Pumzile Simelela. Pumzile is the right-hand man of Deputy Minister. He works in the office of Deputy Minister. On the other side of the lady with the glasses and the long hair is Dr. Joyce Sukumani. Dr. Joyce Sukumani is a director in the language services in the department. That's my two chairperson. Thank you.
Honorable, can you introduce yourself?
Oh, really? Good morning. My name is Sipho Plaki. I'm a member of the Select Committee. I'm representing the Northwest Province in the NCOP.
Oh. Honorable Trevor. You know, I'm just going to act like a teacher, I think, for this meeting to be, so that we can have progress in this meeting. I'm going to separate the two.
All right.
Yes. Let me just take this opportunity. I'm Wendy Makate. I'm from the Northwest Province. And let me just allow Honorable Member to take a seat and introduce herself. Honorable Member there.
Good morning. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm Nomo de Hasmeni from Northwest Province.
Acting DG, I'm going to plead with you because if you look here, two members of the Northwest are the ones who are late, but I still want to apologize on their behalf. Like I indicated that they're from attending other committee meetings. Honorable members and our officials, today we're going to have a briefing on three issues. The first is on transformation charter, and we'll also want to have a progress report around the issue of the community libraries and the indigenous languages. As all of us, as we are seated here, we know that education is one of the key priorities that the president has identified for this term, and we cannot talk of education if we don't have, you know, libraries, or our people are not encouraged to read and to write, and also the issue of the indigenous language, which is very crucial. And from the meetings that we had last year, there were several issues or concerns from this committee. But we are going, I'm firstly going to allow Professor, Kondo, to give us a briefing on the transformation charter, and then after that, the next presentation will follow. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members of the House. Also want to thank our acting DG for being here with us today. I'll just read the text as it is here and reduce additional comments to the barest minimum. The outline there just briefly gives you the key elements of the charter and how the argument in the charter is structured. Move to the next background, and I'll read that one quickly. In April 2008, the National Council for Library and Human Services, known as NCLIS, in consultation with the Department of Arts and Culture, brought together seven people to form the Library and Human Services Transformation Charter team. Briefly, I can just indicate their names. Professor Archie Dick, who is a professor of information science at the University of Pretoria. Professor Mary Nesendam, who is a professor of library and information science, University of Cape Town. Professor Genevieve Hart, who is a professor of library science at the University of Western Cape. Professor Tefu, who is the research director at the HSRC. Professor Sileti, who is the chief director in the Department of Science and Technology. And Mrs. Anna Brown, who is the Department of Education in Gauteng. Next. Scope and purpose of the charter. Briefly, our assignment was to define the challenges facing the sector and to provide a framework for effecting the changes for the sector to contribute to the elimination of illiteracy, eradication of inequality in the sector, promotion of social cohesion, and building an informed and green nation. To be aware that all these objectives are in line with the vision and objectives of the Department of Arts and Culture. Next. Speaker consultation. One of the most consultative processes took place here. Briefings held in 9 provinces, May to July 2008. Mr. briefed the SALGA Executive Committee on Nurse 2008. Presentations at the Liasa Conference, Cape Town, October 2008. Then with the National Summit in Pretoria, 5 December 2008. There was a briefing of National Council for Liberal Library and Information Services on January 2008. Then, of course, we then finally with a briefing of Minister of Arts and Culture and then the briefing of Minister of Education. We have these two briefings because we also dealt with school libraries, university libraries, and the like. So we had to brief the two. And then a briefing of MINMEC, February 2009, and we finally briefed the Portfolio Committee, 2nd June. There were two guiding principles. One, that the policy, in our opinion, becomes policy at the point when it is experienced by the policy beneficiaries. If policy at that point, its final stage, is when it's experienced directly, concretely with the people. Secondly, policy as it's experienced by those who implement it. They still don't experience. But those two causes are very, very important. Our mental framework, together, the 12 chapters lay out a structure of practical reasoning to guide librarians, managers of educational institutions, and public officials specifically on what they should think and do. To exploit the particular circumstances they find themselves in, to enhance the public value of libraries. To achieve these purposes, the Charter develops several different kinds of ideas. The Constitution first, it sets out an idea of what citizens should expect of librarians and public officials involved in the sector. The political, professional, and the ethical responsibilities they assume in taking office, and what constitutes success in the execution of their work. Second, it sets out in broad outline an analytical framework to guide librarians and managers of the educational institutions in analyzing the situations in which they operate and assessing the potential for effective action. First, the Charter identifies particular kinds of interventions they can make to exploit the potential of their political and institutional settings for enhancing efficiency and effectiveness. Methodology, which was the most crucial moment in the entire process. The Charter is grounded in the context of the South African government in the last 50 years. This is very important because you can develop policy outside its own context. Here we're very, very sensitive to say that it must be contextualized within the policy styles of our government. It is based on extensive public consultations in each of the 9 provinces, interviews with scholars and practitioners, as well as on available academic literature that is relevant to understanding the context, purposes, and methods of librarians and managers of educational institutions. This is an overview of saying. The Charter calls for institutional reform and changes in how librarians and managers of ethical institutions should do their work. And here are the changes. national norms and standards. I'll comment briefly on the agency of the Tulenchan issue. The governance, education and training, which means must invest in people's capacities. Protect the most vulnerable, people with disabilities, access and participation. Those two belong together. But we isolated disabilities because of we want to make sure that we heighten attention. But conceptually and technically, they belong together. Culture of reading and the transformation of national culture and how to ensure, let me just speak briefly on it. Hey, at the core of the transmission is the lack of national policy on norms and standards. We underline this challenge in Fit Pencil. It is really very, very urgent that something is done to develop, you know, the guiding principles on the provision of libraries. As it is, provinces, you know, are busy establishing libraries outside any guiding framework. And because of this, it was very difficult to coordinate redress strategies across policies. UKZN has its own, Gauteng is about to do that, and Limpopo. But there are no guiding principles, and we want to urge this committee to ensure that as soon as possible a process is started to develop a national framework for to guide the provinces' governance. Key to the governance challenges are overlapping mandates and the lack of capacity to transform the sector in line with the Bill of Rights and applicable national policies. In this regard, legislation has to be reviewed to eliminate overlaps and confusion at the point of implementation. The overlap between the Department of Arts and Culture and the Department of Education, the overlap between national and provincial, those redundant, you know, mandates, I think we must make sure that we tidy up so that there's no confusion at the level of implementation. Education and training. The future of the sector lies in its human resources. Indeed, the sector must solve its training, recruitment, and retention crisis if it is to contribute to the national development and the achievement of the Millennium Development Goals. The South African curriculum, in its ethos and its pedagogies, cannot be delivered without access to well-managed collections of learning resources. To note here is that quite a number of universities, UCT, UNIS, and others, are beginning to close down library science departments, which will cause a crisis in terms of the supply of skills. The reasons why they are closing down are contained in the chapter. But one of them is a declining image of the librarian because of uncompetitive working conditions. To protect the most vulnerable, government should enforce the United Nations Conventions on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, in terms of which the sector should develop a rights and inclusion policy framework. Honourable members, if you look at the White Paper 6, which deals with the inclusion policy, you'll find that at that time, The Western Cape, for instance, you know, spend five times on a disabled person, much more than the Eastern Cape and Limpopo. There are severe regional inequalities in this area. So it's important that we look at that. Access and participation. As part of a wider set of measures to achieve equality and justice, the sector must ensure free and easy access for all to library and information services. And by the way, we found out that access to information is a human right in this country. So it's a very, very important constitutional provision. Culture of reading and transformation of national culture. To develop a culture of reading, steps should be taken to mobilize TV and other forms of mass media in the campaign to re-socialize all South Africans, especially children and the youth, within the framework of values provided by the Constitution and the White Paper on Bartubile. The other memory institutions, archives, and museums should be advised to develop their own chapters. One comment here. To re-socialize Africa, it will be a long, drawn-out, complex process because it will involve large-scale changes in attitude and behavior. And because of that, we recommend the use of a combination of instruments. Government should chip in, school institutions, but also individual households must be brought in to introduce a culture of reading in their own homes. Well, usually, we tend to forget the household as an effective policy instrument. In this case, one must recommend that the household must assist government and institutions in doing this work. It's important. We also want to suggest that archives, museums, and libraries should be seen as aspects of each other. You won't transform libraries comprehensively unless you transform museums and archives. We want to urge that archives and museums be encouraged to develop their own charters. G. How to ensure effective implementation? If the sector is to take responsibility for its own development, as it should, the Library and Information Associates of Africa and the National Council for Library and Information Services must be given greater authority on issues that concern them. In the health profession, and even in engineering, there are professional bodies with legal authority. We don't have. We want to suggest a similar process be initiated in this sector, so that those two associations have legal authority and will be responsible for accreditation or qualification and for quality assurance. Two, adequate funding must be provided, an independent monitoring and evaluation system must be established to make sure it happens. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor. Is there any other additions or no? Okay. Honorable members, I'm just going to allow for inter-exit, for clarity, taking questions and input on the input. I see the end of Honorable Muse, Honorable Hasmena. Thanks,
Honorable Chairperson.
My take will be on the stakeholder consultation. To say, maybe what I'm going to ask is written in white ink. It is the last bullet there, briefing of portfolio committee, June 2nd, and you omitted the other stakeholder, which is called the SLED Committee on Education and Recreation, the people that are here now, because you also represent the province. We represent the province in the SLED Committee, and this is also a concurrent function. So we omitted. We're not supposed to brief today after you finalize it. I'm going to the challenges and intervention. You have the governance challenges that you have mentioned. The question of the overlapping of mandates. What I will ask is that we have picked it up as a challenge and intervention. So what one will then want to know is that what are the measures that have been put in place to overcome this challenge? Are you having a memorandum of understanding? Are you planning to have are you raising this thing in the cluster, social cluster? What are the mechanisms so that you don't remain with it for life? The last one is on the culture of reading and transformation of the national culture. We are correctly raising the question of mobilizing TV and other forms of mass media. What I'm going to raise here is the whole question of the African content and African languages, because we need to transform this media industry, mass media industry, including TV. You will have your SABC 1, which I don't know whether it's Nguni or what, but whilst you think it is Nguni, it's more English than what the audience is intended to get. So what I want them to say, over and up, taking it from your plans and challenges, how far have you moved in terms of interacting with these stakeholders or these people that we have indicated here? So that we see local content, we see a promotion of our own languages. You have other lines of, let me say, on papers. We have the African medium paper, we have English, we have Ilanga, Lase Natali, and this involved. So, but on TV, you hardly get it. It's just there on for people to, and I don't know, just the CPC 1 Nguni, but it's English. Or if it is English, if it is Nguni, you will have the explanation down there, which then waters down the old papers. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. Yes, I would like to start also by commenting on the issue of provinces, that what is the role of the institution regarding provinces, and how are they performing in line with the responsibilities and mandate that they have outlined to us, and what are their challenges? If you can just tell us about that. And the issue of overlapping mandates and the lack of capacity and also the renewal of legislation, I think the Department of Arts and Culture is supposed to be leading in such things, so that we are also able to comment and also inform that process when it has been started by the department itself.
you also raise a very important issue that on the libraries that are to be closed down in UCT and UNISA. And what advice have you given to this institution linked to the importance that we have raised if they manage to close down these facilities? And we know that what are the implications also to the students that are studying in this university. And on culture of reading and transformation, it's to develop a culture of reading, and steps are taken to mobilize and all those kind of efforts are being made. When are these going to take place? When are they going to start the mobilization of TV and mass media in this area? And lastly, Chairperson, is the issue of the adequate funding that must be provided. And has the department allocated any funding for this institution for it to run as it has been expected to run? Or what do you want us to do in trying to assist the institution to get adequate funding? That will assist us if you can just explain to us. And lastly, Chairperson, is I want to know that when is the department addressing the challenges that has been identified on the challenges that has been raised here presented to us? And thank you very much, Chairperson.
Chair, I don't know whether is it me who's a bit confused on the slide, but I was following it off very well. One, I would just want to check with the department from the challenges that they have raised on the national norms and standards, that whose responsibility is it to make sure that there is a proper crafted national guideline? Is the department itself, or is it the technical committee that has been set aside? I also want to check, because I just look at the task, the mandate that was given to the technical committee in your first slide, scope and purpose. Your mandate was to define the challenges facing the sector. So my understanding is that you're talking about the sector, like the sector in the African culture and library field. That other than the two broad challenges that we have identified in terms of your agenda sector, what are the major milestones that would make your task as the technical team easier to present the recommendation clearly to the department on the transformation, on the performance of the mandate? And the other question is on the methodology. You have explained that this is a system that you have used to collect information, the method, interviews and scholars, and you have interviewed scholars and practitioners, meaning maybe the educators and professors in the universities, practitioners as well. So in your interview, what were the critical things that were highlighted by both the students, scholars, and the practitioners in terms of the challenges facing the sector itself? This is what I wanted to check with you on. Well, the overlapping mandate, Honorable Pink, you have spoken on it. I will not repeat it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Psyche. Honorable Pink, did you want to say something?
You mentioned the effective implementation, greater authority, to say if the sector is to take responsibility for its own development, as it should, the library, whatever, must speak even greater authority on issues that concern them. And the question would be, what do you mean by it? Do you mean autonomy? Are they underfunded or what? It's a little bit vague to us if you have to understand it. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Cynthia. We'll give you the second round. Prof, before you respond, I would just like to check under the stakeholder consultation, there were briefings which were held in the blind purposes. So one would like to check for easy coordination, do we have, you know, like provincial technical committees? And what is their composition, if ever there is that. And where I'm seated, I know that it won't be easy or for the technical committee, you know, to in each and every challenge that they've picked up to raise the issues on how to deal with that. But one would be more interested to take, like you indicated, the issue of training, recruitment and retention. What is your strategy, or how you advise how to deal with that, you know, how to for retention strategy? What is that, maybe what the technical committee would propose that it should be taken forward? And also the issue of overlapping. We know that we've got the local government. How is the relation, or what is the advice to the provincial technical teams, if ever they're there, to liaise with the local structures?
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. So these are very wide-ranging questions, and some of the questions will be dealt with by the department itself. There are questions here that lie outside our scope. Let me just answer them in terms of the sequence, so it's easier to cover all the questions at the same time. There are questions about the stakeholder consultation. Why the Select Committee on Education Recreation has been omitted. This is part of that process. This is part of the process that we stay within the plans of the department. We were asked to present to portfolio committee last year, and then after that we present the same to you, and that's why we are here today. So it is not an omission. It is a process. And I think, you know, I'm sure we'll still move on to consult all the key stakeholders in the policy process.
Maybe to assist, the department was supposed to brief us last year on the transformation charter, but because of the program by then, that is why we made them to be the first this year.
Yes. Let me deal with the identification of the challenges. You know, the charter, there are three processes. There is the charter process, which lays guidelines for policy, and then policy is developed into law. This is the charter process. The details about how each of these challenges will be carried forward belongs to the next process, and will be advised by the department whether we should continue. That is what it is. So it's important that the challenges that, you know, we have identified, it's really a distillation of all the key challenges that are identified in the entire process. This is really a distillation. What you see here is the outcome of observations, recommendations, and we try to canvas national consensus on this. So what you see here is really the collective, you know, assessment of the various stakeholders. And of course, how to implement these recommendations belongs to the NAFTA. And I think the department will decide on how to do that. So it doesn't belong to this process. National norms and standards. This is a big one. This is one of the challenges that was regarded as most urgent by almost all the stakeholders. And we recommend that a special process be initiated to establish national norms. And if you look at cross-country comparisons, most advanced economies have established frameworks. This country, we argue, needs this most desperately because of the historical inequalities. Let us give an example. We found out that only 2.7% of schools in this country have functioning libraries. Only 2.7%. Okay? The Western Cape has, I think, 10%, and that is the most advanced. Then comes Gauteng. Limpopo, Eastern Cape, Northern Cape, about 2.1% of schools there have function libraries. At a time when our education philosophy is based on the principle of outcomes. And as we all know, if it's outcomes based, then the matter of resources is very important, and access to resources. So this is something that, and we are urging now that a process be started to make sure that there is national guidance on this issue. Just now, the provinces are on their own; they have their own projects, but unguided by a national framework. The question of governance, we say in the charter, is ultimately a constitutional issue. There must be another process to dissolve the functional redundancies, to dissolve the overlaps. We need a constitutional process to clean that up. For instance, there has been confusion about the conditional grant, whether it covers schools or not. There's a lot of confusion there. For instance, in some provinces, school libraries and community libraries, you know, have been merged. There are necessary tensions between arts and culture and education, because people are experimenting with a number of library digital models which are impeded by this overlap or by the uncertainty in the country. So I think that's what I'm talking about. Governance, the kind of authority we are recommending is that, like in engineering and in health, that there should be a professional authority that will be responsible for quality assurance. That's what we're saying. And we think that these two bodies, ENCLIS and the other, these two bodies should be elevated into formal structures with legal force. That was recommended, but that also needs another process. I'm sure the lawyers will be better qualified to handle that one. We are aware, I'm sure, just now there is a community a library amendment bill that is beginning to deal with the question of norms, providing an enabling framework. framework for the norms to be developed. Education training. We had a long discussion with university librarians and trying to urge them not to close down library science departments. Their argument is that library science departments are not self-sustaining. You know, there are fewer and fewer students registering for these courses for a number of reasons. So most of them depend on what's called cross-subsidization. They are subsidized by other departments. And very few departments would like to bear that burden. And because of university autonomy, it's very, very difficult even for the department to intervene. But the university claim that they have the authority to decide on how to allocate its resources. So it's a very difficult constitutional matter that which we spell out in the charter. But something must be done for government to influence this, you know, give a provision of library science education and influence universities not to close down. The culture of reading and transformation. This is very difficult even to come out of the policy. We, after looking at the problem carefully, we feel this is one place where the responsibility cannot be solely with the government. The government needs, particularly, you know, individual households. Parents must be actively involved in creating a culture of reading. By the time they go to school, 6 years later, attitudes have already formed. It is very important that parents are regarded as key policy instruments in implementing this recommendation. It's not an easy matter. So that's why we are calling for a combination of diverse policy instruments to deal with it. Also, it will need what I would call large-scale changes in attitude. People in this country don't take libraries seriously. Most people in this country don't read for a number of reasons. We are not passing judgment, but we are just being simply analytical. So to change attitudes, to change behavior, will take a long time. It will take much more than government and its agencies. Effective implementation, again, for something as complex as this, we need a process that will look at what should be done concretely, step by step, to implement all these, you know, recommendations. But that's a different process beyond this. Okay. Thank you. You are left in the organization? Okay. Oh yeah, sorry. No, we didn't have, you know, provincial technical committees ourselves. No, it was just a committee of seven, and we worked with provincial departments of arts and culture, and provincial departments of education to come up with this. We met almost all the senior people in the two departments, all the professionals and the students and even just ordinary people on the ground. But we didn't establish technical teams.
Thank you, Honorable Arantua. Honorable de Villiers, do you have something?
That's
Honorable
a question.
Villiers, is there any other member?
Thanks, Chairperson. Prof, I just wanted to add on what you have just mentioned on working together with the community, especially the involvement of parents in starting to educate the children at home. I was going to ask that these interviews that you made local, you've done, have you done it on upper structures like in high school, colleges and universities? Haven't you thought of going down to the local schools, especially in the rural areas, so as to get the gist of not being able to read and write in the rural areas? What is happening in the schools? And also I think the children in the rural areas, some of them are able to read and write, but the culture of reading, it's not in them. They read only when it is necessary to read in schools or so. That is why I wanted to know about these things. In the collection of learning resources, I'm not sure about your budget as a ministry. Have you made a visibility study in the schools and see how many learning materials and learning resources are in the schools? I'm coming from a very rural area, a rural town. You see these small towns in Eastern Cape? They've got schools with libraries, but now the libraries are changed into classrooms. Because the activity that is supposed to be done in the library, it's more of, even if it's not done, after all, we don't have a librarian. So they changed the classroom, the library into a classroom. And the books are being packed in another room that is not in use. I'm talking about the school. So this thing of reading in our schools, it's really not in their blood, because I'm worried that the department will look for learning resources, maybe tendering to get learning resources, and yet in the schools there are learning resources. It's just that they are locked in some room. In my school where I'm coming from, in Jamestown, next to Alwal North, Pahameng Primary School, in that school there's a TV set, there's all these materials, TV, the library, it's a classroom now. The TV is locked in somewhere in the strong room, and all the other things that are there, because there is no space for them to put in the TV and the other things. I think we should be making together, doing a feasibility study in the schools and see if it is really necessary to look around and find somebody who can bring learning resources in the schools, whereas the schools have got the learning resources in them. And we need to do a program as a department. You need to do a program in advocacy to our local people on libraries. In Alwal North, there was a library that was in the community, in the local community there. But I don't know now what happened to that library. It seems as if they've opened a radio. Dagalani is now using the space of the library. So there are those things that are happening in our communities. I think it's the lack of knowledge on how important a library is in a community. Thanks, Sir President.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Member, I'm going to plead with members. We are still going to have two presentations.
Oh.
Honourable De Villiers is Honorable Mubi, I'm not going to give you an opportunity because if you have the issues that you are dealing with, Honorable Civilian.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I hope that Honorable Faber brief you why I was late. Chairperson, I'm actually interested in the outcome of library and the use of it. So what I'm actually interested in and the question I want to pose to the prof is what definite focus do they recommend to the department to actually encourage the learners to make use of the books currently at schools? Because at the school where I was learning and also teaching in my teaching profession, was I asked the teachers to make use of the different books in the classroom, a small kind of library, so that the learners can see there are some books which they can use. It's not necessary to eventually go to a library to go and read there. So what I'm actually interested in, what processes do you recommend to the department to encourage the learners at schools?
Well, thanks very much. Let me just quickly deal with that. We, looked at that very, very carefully. And our impression is reading to some extent is a function of teaching method. The way you teach and how you examine kids will determine reading attitude. If exams are based on textbooks or on lecture guides, and there is no call to refer beyond the lecture guide or beyond the textbook, then students will not read. But if the way you teach them and the way you examine them forces them to consult library material, then the reading culture will improve. Our impression is that there's a lot of textbook teaching and a lot of rote memory. That's why children are not inspired to read beyond what takes place in the classroom. How to change that is a complex process. And that's why we have to have a very, very extensive discussion with the Department of Education. Outcomes-based education, with all its problems, would encourage students to teach when they work on their projects. It has its complications, but that's one way in which students are forced to teach if they have to solve problems in real life. And I think that is what the word. So I think that is something that, that about the uses of the library, we looked at that carefully. And all the members may want to know that it is quite a number of libraries in this country are staffed by unqualified people. People who have no idea about libraries, and they don't even know the first thing about how even to catalog and to share. But you find somebody in charge of a library. So it's a very, very important matter that we must get qualified librarians to make sure that, okay. Second, we didn't find any evidence in all the provinces that there's been a study of how students use libraries. In advanced economies, there are scientific studies of what children on a regular basis make use of libraries, or in how the general public make use of libraries. Such studies are topic. We need to do that. But how are the students making use of libraries and do a kind of audit, very, very careful audit, so that we are able to intervene. So it's important that upper structures, he said. In all your members will appear the fact that it is very, very difficult, even the most progressive of governments, to fully involve the poor in rural areas in policy processes. It's very, very difficult. We tried. For example, you know, we went to the Eastern Cape, for instance, and had our public consultations in East London. But how do you get people from Ilusikisiki there to come? It is cost implications. And we had to decide whether to have two consultations in one province. But even if you took it to Ilusikisiki, there are people out there in PE who won't be able to make it. So there are very concrete obstacles in consulting extensively, particularly in rural areas. Northern Cape. We had consultations in Kimberley, and many people from the Upington area would make it. Huge, you know, distances like that. So there are practical problems on the ground. There's also the problem of language. Okay? You get to a place that there were only seven of us. We didn't all speak all the languages in this country. So we went to a place, and people understand very little English. And you have to find somebody locally to interpret. So there are very, very good idea. But how to operationalize it is very, very difficult. And I'm sure all the good members have gone through this in other settings. So it's a very, very important. But we tried our best to ensure that at least students were bused to the various set of venues. That we tried. So. And then infrastructure. You know, KPMG was commissioned to do an audit of community libraries. But what comes out of that brilliant study is that it's an audit of the physical infrastructure. By the audit of library items, we still have done. We must decide how many library items has who in relation to public. That highly refined audit still has to be done. So we don't know now how many books are where, or how many books are required, how many journals. So that audit still has to be done. But there's a good, you know, starting point with a KPMG study. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Professor. I think when you talk about those not being easy for the team to reach out to the rural, you know, to this member, you are sending a very, I don't know how to put it, but it's very painful because these are the issues that we are confronted with. That people are saying to us, we are South Africans. It is not by choice that we are not staying in urban areas. But every time it comes to us, it's not easy. I just want, maybe I felt that I should just indicate that because it's, to us it's very serious. And for an ordinary person to say that, it will be like an insult to her, because even sometimes we question the issue of the research that have been done. People will come and present the research, but if we check, it's just based on the people that they could access, have access to. Those who there are no roads, they are staying in, you know, this deep rural areas, that the research is not done on those people. And, you know, to us, it's like, it's discriminating. Mm-hmm. Particularly as the NCOP, we are representing provinces. We are from these rural areas, and we know exactly what is happening. I just wanted to raise that, Professor, we appreciate what you have done as a technical team, but we feel that, you know, there are issues that as politicians here, we cannot really come and, you know, justify. On that note, I'm going to hand to the acting director to give, or who's supposed to give us the presentation on the two outstanding presentations to do that.
Thank you, Chair. The next presentation on community libraries will be presented by the Director on Library Policies and Coordination, Mr. Kulenkekan. Whilst we looking for the presentation, I just want to say, Chair and members, that the technical team has not presented yet the transmission charter to the minister. So to the current minister, to the new minister. So it will be presented to the minister. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members, as well as the acting DG. My presentation will seek to update the Select Committee on the building of libraries in the provinces. You will note in my presentation that there will be some overlapping in emphasis on what Professor Ngondo has raised, and I'll also attempt to deal with the financial issues that have been asked by some members. I'll touch very briefly on the government priorities, the brief background to the project. I'll talk specifically to the conditional grant projects, and I will also highlight some of the major challenges that we are facing as a department when implementing this project. And some of the major challenges, of course, are issues that already Professor Ngondo has raised. And these are basically broad government priorities that we understand them, that have been announced. The issue of creating a decent work and sustainable livelihood, the issue of education, as Honorable Chairperson has already alluded to, issue of reading and writing, and of course the support for quality education and eradication of illiteracy, health, rural development, as well as the fight against crime and corruption. A brief background to the project. You're aware of the issue of unfunded mandate at local government. You will know that historically this has been a function that has been a shared competency between provinces and municipalities, and which each sphere of government performing certain functions. For instance, provinces would do bulk buying of materials, and municipalities would maintain the buildings and the assets, as well as payment of staff. The issue of access to information, as already alluded to, is not only a human rights issue, but also is an issue of access to information. Is basically a source of wealth, is a source of power. So information is very critical for development, and lack of access to information hinders self-development. Of course, the issue of skills development and raising public awareness of the sector itself. Professor Ngondo spoke about the challenges that the university schools are facing. One of them is that they don't actually have or attract enough students in the schools. The disparities in service provision between provinces and within the provinces. Also, I must say here that the investigation that was done a couple of years ago that Professor Ngondo referred to indicated that in 2007 there were about 1,800 community libraries in the country, but most of them are actually in the Western Cape, in Gauteng, and in KZN, as well as in the Free State. The rural provinces do not have facilities, and this is basically due to the legacy of apartheid in terms of underdevelopment. And of course, I think we see the sector contributing quite a lot to social cohesion and nation building by nurturing and collecting, promoting literature, in particular indigenous languages, family literacy clubs, and supporting adult education, teenage reading clubs, and storytelling activities, all of which contribute to or significantly towards the building of nation building and social cohesion. The purpose of the conditional grant is to transform urban and rural community library infrastructure, facilities and services, primarily targeting previously disadvantaged communities through a recapitalized program at provincial level in support of local government. Basically, what we are saying is that we would like to ensure that provinces are properly recapacitated to deliver directly and respond to the needs of the communities when it comes to the provision of libraries and information services. The outcome statement, improved coordination and collaboration between national and provincial and local government. In other words, we would like to see that the three spheres of government actually work together in providing this function. Transformed and equitable lists delivered to all rural and urban communities. Improved library infrastructure and services that reflect the specific needs of communities, and ensuring that there is adequate staff at community libraries that are able to respond to community needs, and of course, improving the culture of reading. The key outputs is the governance structures, the issues of library materials, ICT infrastructure, services for the visually impaired, and, of course, the building of new libraries, additional staff appointed, and, of course, monitoring and evaluation is very important. And then, of course, we provide an overview of the expenditure for 9 and 10 so that the committee is aware of the program performed in the previous financial year. Collectively, provinces were able to spend 88.7% of the budget available. And this is the overview of the 2010 MTF allocations. You will see that the rural provinces actually get significant amount of funding. And basically, that is the criteria that we used because of lack of infrastructure in these provinces. So the criteria we use is needs approached. It is not based on how many people are in the province. It is basically based on the number of facilities that are there in the provinces. In the current financial year, by the end of December, collectively provinces spent 53.5% of the expenditure or allocation that is available, and I will later on touch on the difficulties and the challenges that that provinces experience, and some of which contribute towards the under expenditure in the provinces. As a result of the under expenditure, the department took a decision to withhold some of the funding to provinces. And this is basically a due diligence, a mechanism provided for in the Division of Revenue Act that ensures that the department does not continue to transfer funding to provinces when provinces are not able to utilize the funding for the intended purposes. We withheld 14 million from the Eastern Cape. We withheld 5.5 million from Limpopo, I mean from KZN, 9.6 million from Limpopo, 16 million from Mpumalanga, 12 million from Northern Cape, and 8.4 million from Northwest. And all in all, it's about 16 million. The transfer, the funding was withheld end of January. The Act provides that we can withhold the funding for 30 days, during which time we have to assess the performance of the provinces, and if it is satisfactory, we would release the funding to the provinces. And we will make that assessment before the end of the month. We will look at the expenditure by the end of January, and we would look at the commitment that they have, and together with the National Treasury, we will decide whether we should release the funding to them or we should continue to withhold the funding. Some of the conditions that have been imposed on us by the National Treasury is that this funding is not a replacement funding for provinces. In other words, provinces may not, because of the funds that they get, reduce the equitable share budget for providing library services. But I must pause here and indicate that indeed we have serious challenges in some of the provinces, like Mpumalanga, for instance. The only funding that is available for providing library service at community level is the conditional grant. The equitable share budget has dried up, and I think in the long term, it actually poses a risk on the sustainability of this project. We continue to interact with the provinces and with the support of the National Treasury to ensure that they do indeed provide funding from their own budget as well. And of course, provinces remain accountable for funds that are transferred to municipalities. They are responsible for monitoring and evaluation. And we ourselves monitor provinces very closely. We meet with provinces every quarter. They report to us the progress. We interrogate their reports. And where possible, we advise them on what to do. But every quarter, we do indeed meet with the provinces, and they submit reports. We analyze them, and we make recommendations when necessary. Just an indication of some of the projects that have been completed in the last financial year. We were able to upgrade 43 libraries. We've built, completed libraries in Kloofontein, Msogwaba, and Siyabuswa. And there was a new library as well in Sikelo and Fishgale, and Simuni, as well as Richmond in the Northern Cape. We are also rolling out a library system in 6 provinces, in the Western Cape, Northern Cape, and Northwest, Mpumalanga, KZN, and Eastern Cape. And I think we're also going to be including Limpopo as well. And this system is a library management system, an integrated library management system that will make sure that provinces are able to talk to each other in terms of sharing collection and able to manage the interlibrary system. In the current financial year, so far there's been 15 libraries that have been completed, and there are new libraries in Limpopo, Tulamela, Fetakomu, Buckley West, and Haaswater in the Northern Cape, Greens Park, and Khayelitsha. Some of the projects, just to indicate to the committee, where the money is actually going. These are the projects that we are currently working on. They are not necessarily completed, but it's just an indication of where the projects are and in which municipality they are located. And they are all in different stages. Some of them might be concluded by the end of March. And of course, we are working towards concluding them in the end of March, but some of them may not actually be concluded. And this basically is just a highlight of the project in Mpumalanga, in Silindile, in Sikalikwa municipality, Driefontein, in Mkondo, Subukani, in Bushbuck Ridge and Butleng, the northwest, you've got Destach, Wikutso, as well as Litupa. And in Limpopo, you've got Bakoma, Otterbeck, Rapotukwani, Vila Vila, and Mutale, in Venda, and Shilovani, in Mopane. In the Eastern Cape, you've got Mount Elif in the Alfred and Zomi District Municipality, and Mutanzani in Buffalo City. In KZN is Mbazwana, Mhlabuya Lingana, and Kuteni in Kandla. Northern Cape in Nababib, and the Free State Lukhof, Harib District, and the Western Cape Friedenberg. Some of the achievements so far, we are working very closely with the Library for the Blind. You will know that the Library for the Blind operates like a postal service. In other words, if a person is in Kimberley, they would write to the library in Grahamstown and request a book, and the library would post the book to them. We are trying to make sure that together with the library, we're rolling out a DAISY project, which is a digitally accessible information system. It's an equipment that print-disabled members of a community are able to utilize, and they are able to use it to actually access literature. And we're working with the library to actually roll it out in certain libraries so that people are able to access information in that way. And also we have one of the successful projects of the grant itself is a republication of African literature classics. And we actually brought some of the books here so that the members can see which books have been reprinted and in what language. But this has been a very significant project of the grant because of this whole mismatch between what is available in the community, I mean in the library, and what the community would like to read in their own languages. And of course, the process of drafting the Library Transformation Charter has been a success story in that we've been able to go through the comprehensive consultation processes. And we are moving towards finalizing the document. And I think this is going to guide the sector as we move forward in implementing the project. Already, we as a department are looking at some of the recommendations that have been made. The department is drafting what is called a Community Library and Information Services Bill, which seek to actually set the framework for developing norms and standards for the community libraries. The bill is at a stage where we are discussing it with the provinces, and it will go to the TIC as well as to MINMEC, and we are looking forward to a time when we will actually present the bill to this committee for discussion. The major challenges is, as indicated earlier, the issue of staff turnover. Because of the disparities in salaries between the municipalities and you've got people moving between, moving from the rural provinces basically to the cities. And this continues to become a challenge for the program. And, of course, the issue of Schedule 5. Is an ongoing challenge in that we expect provinces to actually sign service level agreements or MOUs with municipalities every single year. and those negotiations between province and municipalities are very difficult negotiations because of the issue of the unfunded mandate. And of course, there are sometimes issues of moratoria in the provinces. For instance, you will have a moratorium on the appointment of staff in a province. And if the Department of Arts and Culture in that particular province had intended to, through this particular project, to appoint 50 or 40 community librarians, then they are not able to appoint them. Sometimes we find that there are a moratorium placed on appointment of contractors. Now, if the department wanted to build a library, also that becomes to a standstill. What we have done as a department is that we would write to the province via the DG to request the province to actually lift the moratorium or exclude the project from the moratorium. And in certain instances, like in the Free State, we've been successful, and that has been done. But that continues to become a problem, because if you had planned to complete a project within a particular time frame and there's a moratorium, you are not able to do that. The issue of infrastructure is a very serious problem or challenge, in that departments rely entirely on public works to to appoint consultants, advertise tenders, as well as appoint contractors. And there's a whole relationship between the provincial arts and culture and the public works department. Is a very complex relationship, and I think it continues to actually present itself as a serious challenge, in that most of the under expenditure in the provinces is basically on infrastructure, and provinces will tell us that we rely on public works, and public works is not assisting us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members. The next presentation on language services will be led by Dr. Joyce Sukuman, Director in the Language Service.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Are you still putting up the presentation? I know you're nervous. Are you still putting it up? Thank you. Thank you. Honourable members, the Select Committee, Recreation and Education of the other way around. Now, Acting DG, Department of Arts and Culture. Colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, I'm presenting the report on progress of the development of languages in the provinces. And my name is Joyce Sukumane, heading the language planning section in the Department of Arts and Culture, and presenting on behalf of my GG. Outline of the presentation, I'm going to look at, just to contextualize our discussion, the legislative context, national language policy framework that flows from that legislative mandate, and then address issues on policy and implementation and language, and then finally wrap up on the progress on the provinces and outline a bit of our challenges and recommendations. On the legislative process context, of course, Section 6 of the Constitution is one that provides our principal legal framework for multilingualism. The development of the official languages and the promotion of respect and tolerance for South Africa's linguistic diversity. It is this piece of legislation that determines the language rights of citizens, which must be honored through national language policies. When we say national, in this sense, we mean nationwide. Then, backing that, obviously, should be legislation. And maybe later on, we could speak to the developments around language legislation. But now we do have a national language policy framework in place that was approved by Cabinet in 2003. And it also speaks to the Constitution, which advocates the promotion of multilingualism in South Africa. The policy framework, then, we understand caters adequately for the harmonization of language policy at all three levels of government. Catering adequately does not necessarily mean it caters for it in an ideal sense, but we're satisfied with what is going on. When it comes to implementation of the policy, of course, it's got its aims, which again are the constitutional provisions. The aims are to promote the equitable use of 11 languages, to facilitate equitable access to government services, knowledge, and information, to ensure redress for the previously marginalized official languages, the indigenous previously marginalized languages, and of course to initiate and sustain a vibrant discourse on multilingualism with all language communities. It also aims to encourage the learning of other languages to promote national unity and linguistic and cultural diversity. Now, in the presentation, it says encouraging learning of other official languages. But we are aware that the landscape is fast changing on the ground because of migration, diaspora, and all those issues that are really speaking to affecting the landscape on the ground. We may want to say encouraging learning of other languages. The industry can expand around that. And also to promote good language management for efficient public service administration to meet client expectations and needs. And there's a two-way prong thing here. The client expectations and needs, mostly the work that the provinces and national are doing is to meet the needs of government, all government departments, in terms of making sure that information is accessible in these languages. But there are instances of requirements on the ground for interpreting and other issues like that. We have the deaf community, for instance, with the blind communities of the deaf. And so sometimes there is need for that. As a clientele, we might recognize them too in that sense. Continuing on policy implementation, I just want to emphasize that the establishment of language units is key to implementation at all these levels. Now, each national government department and each province, in that sense, impacts on the scope of policy implementation through these language units. The work of the department is to coordinate and to monitor the management of this policy implementation. And we have a national language forum, the membership of which is every government member, and provincially, locally, and nationally. We also facilitate training for language unit staff through a bursary scheme. We do make sure that there are translators, editors, document designers, interpreters, human language technologists, terminologists, and lexicographers trained towards capacity building in language practice. And we also establish operational guidelines on quality issues. So far, we've worked hard. We have a document produced that we share on translation and editing and the workflow process. And so the scope of activities, just to be on the same page, to just say this that are listed here are not an exhaustive list of what a unit can do, but these are the key activities that take place on the ground. Language planning is very, very important. I mean, this is the first and foremost. That's where you expect a language unit to be able to develop provincial policies and legislation as per the requirements of the Constitution and the National Language Policy Framework. And we also have on a standing, you know, as a standing unit, we have terminology development in all fields. That is, they would develop terminologies in different provinces, focus on different areas, but you have terminology, medical terminology, political, economic, HIV and AIDS, and the most recent one that all provinces have done are the soccer terminologies for 2010. We also do have interpreting, translation, and editing. And as I've said, translation and editing is a standing item because they have to service government around them, wherever they are in the province. And interpreting, it is really reported minimally. Not every, in fact, most of them do not engage directly in interpreting. Because now what reasons have been cited here is inadequate infrastructure for capacity, especially in interpreting and training. Well, we also do have challenges in languages in terms of finding translators themselves, just language practice generally. And then, of course, they would be expected to do lexicography, which is dictionary making, and it goes together with developing terminology, which is required for the successful implementation of the policy. That's where you need all the terminology and the dictionaries to do interpreting translation effectively. And also training with regard to managing policy implementation, they have to address that by training, you know, programs. As I've said, we facilitate that as a department and we take the lead in it. They are expected to do that. And I'm going to report later on what our provinces separately have been able to do. And we do that with accredited providers, and these are the universities. Language technology should be used now to facilitate collaboration in the work that is being done across the board by all stakeholders to develop the indigenous languages. We do want these languages to become technologized. So we do look to development of computer software programs to manage the terminology development and the systems and translation that are compatible across the board so that we can speak to each other through technology. There's also a standing item, the language awareness campaigns, which are necessary in order to arouse public interest in language matters. We are dealing with the issue of diversity and multiculturalism and looking at it in terms of social cohesion and nation building. It is an important item to consider. And then, of course, monitoring and evaluation. This goes on through different structures to review and identify the strengths and weaknesses of the implementation and to monitor progress. We also, as I've indicated, have the National Language Forum. Nationally, we were able to track each other's work and input into that. And as a department, we use that forum to do our coordination and our input into progress. Ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, progress / achievement in language planning. Up until now, we have only 4 provinces with developed policies. Now, developed policies meaning policies that are officialized and approved and are recognized. The Western Cape, KZN, Gauteng, and Limpopo have rolled out those, and they've identified the languages on the ground, and they're working through those policies. The province of Mpumalanga has finalized their draft, and they are awaiting their cabinet approval. Their own legislature is working on that right now. And then we have these 4 provinces that have outstanding policies now in draft form: Northern Cape, Free State, Northwest, and Eastern Cape. And only Western Cape and KZN have language legislation. And Gauteng is finalizing that draft on language legislation. And the 6 provinces have not begun to work on their legislation yet. Coming to the language units, which you are saying they're a crucial structure to implementing the policy and the constitutional mandate. These languages are established in all 9 provinces, but it's not necessarily meaning all 9 provinces have a dedicated language unit. Some have a language function, as I say here, language unit, stroke language function. 5 provinces, that is the majority, have units dedicated specifically to language. And so they are able to attend to language issues effectively, I suppose. Western Cape, Free State, Limpopo, KZN, Northwest. The rest of them are classified along with sport, recreation, arts, and culture. And that presents a language for the development of, rather a challenge for the development of language. And then we have collaborative structures that they work with. On the ground, you have their provincial forums that are patterned after our own national language forum. And we have pensub structures, which are the language committees, to ensure effective and implementation reported, and of course, implementation which is reported differentially across the provinces. It's not every province who has the structure formalized, but they work with them, either as a language forum or a pensub structure. To continue on this achievement, key activities are going on in terminology development. As I mentioned, ladies and gentlemen, 7 provinces quite clearly are engaged in terminology development, except the Northern Cape. The Northern Cape has reported to not ever have done any language terminology development because of lack of capacity. They don't have a budget. They have vacancies that are not filled. And while we are just finishing saying Northwest does have a dedicated language unit, they have not reported any activity on terminology development. Translation and editing, which does happen in 8 provinces, servicing their own government, local government, happens now except in the Northern Cape again for the same reason: no capacity, no budget, vacancies not filled. Where literature is being developed, In different extents or to different extents, all provinces engage in literature development. They will report work done in workshops that they do to produce writers, poetry, short stories, novels, to different degrees. Interpreting, as I've said, is happening very minimally. And it is really worrisome, but we understand that may be due to infrastructure and other, you know, related challenges like the budget and capacity. But we have learned that Gauteng and the Western Cape, as an outreach program, they do engage in that. They probably will, for instance, go to a hospital and offer an interpreting service. Now, coming to skills development, again, it's reported minimally, except in the Western Cape, they've reported that they've trained Nama speakers in the communities. Again, I suppose not quite in a formal sense as in people going to university and acquiring a degree, but some literacy, conversational type going on in Nama, isiXhosa and Afrikaans. And Limpopo basically trains their own staff in the language service in sign language. The program is going on right now. There are language awareness campaigns, as I've said, those are necessary to raise their publicity, you know, advocacy rather, around issues of language. These occur in most of these provinces. They all, for instance, celebrate the Mother Tongue Day, International Translation Day. And some of them would do other things like word first competitions and so forth. Now, monitoring and evaluation, they also have reported to be doing those through their own language forum and the provincial forums along with the language committees. The challenges that we want to bring before the committee are the following. It is a cabinet decision that was taken in 2007 to establish dedicated language units. And since then, the deadline was set at 2012 for all, including local government, to shall have established dedicated language, you know, standalone units to dedicate themselves to the work of developing language. And as I've said, the fact on the ground is that some of them are still tied up with issues of recreation, sport, arts, culture, and they don't dedicate themselves to languages. And those that do don't seem to be properly capacitated. We also have a challenge around provinces with outstanding policies, the one I've named above, due to lack of capacity, the report and infrastructure. And of course, there is an enabling legislation that is now needing attention, judging from the present litigation against all provinces by Advocate Lawrence. He's now forcing all provinces to have legislation in place. And then, of course, there is need to create the sustainable jobs, and we say that is delayed. And I think the big one for us is mainstreaming language support. And that will be speaking specifically to revisiting the budgets that are allocated to the development of language. And I think that brings us to our recommendations to the Select Committee, honorable members, that perhaps could assist in discussing and finding strategies to fast-track the initiative. That would really mean for us the singling out of language units in all provinces to address this, as well as creation of the jobs that are sustainable. And then it means to mainstream language support. Otherwise, we recognize that the work of the department, as I've said, is just to facilitate, coordinate, and guide provinces. it is important to understand that up until now they haven't seen themselves as accounting to DAC. They are autonomous, and we really also do respect that. We do not facilitate anything or coordinate or fund them around issues of finance and how they run. And their planning is, up until now, it has been really independent of the DAC. But we also would like to say constitutionally, it is the PEMSAB who is charged with the role to make sure that on the ground, the conditions that are necessary for an effective and efficient development of language occurs, as well as looking out for all official languages, the sign languages, Khoi, Nama, and the sign language. At this point, ladies and gentlemen, I will thank you and take it back to the city.
Thanks, Jake. Over to you.
Thank you. It's just unfortunate that we didn't invite the province of the MECs, because if one is listening to the presentation, it needs, you know, there are so many questions to be answered. But I think as a committee we'll look into that, to invite the agencies and their HODs to come before the select committee. On that note, I'm going to request members, Honorable Fava, Honorable Nube, Honorable Blackie. Are you fine, Honorable Dipila? Later, you will come later. That's the question.
Thank you, Madam G, and thanks, DG, for your staff's presentations here. I never thought I would say that. I'm actually ashamed of my province not being the only province not presenting the developed policies on this terminology development. So I will definitely attend when I get to the province. I will speak to some of the people there and find out why it's not been done. I understand, as you say, it's because of the lack of capacity and budget, but I can't see that being a constraint, as the MECs should work out a budget accordingly to look at all these specific problems that they should adhere to. I would like to know as well what I don't understand, if the Northern Cape province is that there's a budget constraint, but the previous speaker said that there is 12.08 million which has been held back because they did not spend their budget. Now, I suppose the budgets are being divided in certain areas, but I mean, it is a concern to me that my province of Northern Cape, if they didn't spend 12.8 million, is it possible for them to actually channel money from one to another? I'd like to know that, because if there was a budget constraint, why don't they just channel some funding or resources to other divisions so that they can comply with what they need to comply with? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks, Robert Chairperson. Let me start with the community library grant. To say the infrastructure achievements 2009-2010. The presentation says the upgrading of 43 libraries completed. The nature of the select committee is that you are representing provinces. So when you come up with an overall, it gives a problem. When you say 43, in the SLED committee want to know in which provinces, where. You also are talking about the ICT, six provinces. It is the same thing. When it says six provinces, which provinces? So that we have a clue when we go back to our provinces. Let me then go to the extinction of the African languages. To say in universities, the language departments are being closed because there's no intake. You go to schools in the same universities. You have the training of the teachers. You also don't get teachers taking African languages as their major. You go back to schools. Now schools are having a problem of teaching the African languages. And because I'm coming from the teaching background before I came here, this is as a result of the redeployment that started in 1996. The intention was good, redeploy capacity where it is needed, where there is an oversupply in one school. But the interpretation was to say you are redeploying deadwoods. And African, because there was an oversupply on African language teachers, they would be the first to be redeployed. But the receiving schools will be saying, Oshiwe la upuma kwa. And also the question of when they arrive there, it will be when the school wants to redeploy, also they'll start with this one. Now, there will be no, the new intake in the universities, they will avoid the African languages because you want to have stability. And also, with the advent of unintended consequence, with the advent of democracy, former model C schools, the parents, because we think it's nice to have even those that are learning and those that are not learning, they will want to choose the SGPs because the powers are there. They will want to choose the medium of instruction from preschool to the English. So that English in Amakala, at the expense of the promotion of the African languages. And find our children growing up in coconut, they can't communicate in their own languages. So it's a whole problem of we have not yet understood what is this liberation and democracy that we're having here. And I'm then raising it to the Department of Arts and Culture to say you have a major task of educating the community in terms of let's go back to our roots. I mean, language is power. Otherwise, in 20 years from now, will only learn that there was an African language, whatever, and or in the constitution, you end up amending the constitution in terms of going back to English and African. But I'll also then say, it then goes back to the libraries to say, I know you have a leaky budget of bursaries. Of bursaries. So, as you issue out these bursaries, I'm not sure where does it go to, whether you allocate that bursary to the librarians, which goes to community libraries. I also know that they migrate also from libraries, from community libraries, because of salaries. I don't even know who negotiates for them, but the retention strategies, whether it goes to local government or it goes to the provinces, I don't know. But you also need to find out in terms of what makes them, what makes this profession not to be attractive. Is it because it's a low salaries or what? In the question of, so I'm reading this in the redress part of it. The question of the redress principle moving together with the advocacy in the transformation and also in the promotion of African languages, which then goes to the progress done in the development of the indigenous languages. If pens up by law or by constitution does not account to Department of Arts and Culture, but it is unwritten law or it's written that it is under Department of Arts and Culture. So what I will ask, Ogoti, what are the mechanisms that you have put in place? Because you all complain about you don't see progress of what PENSARP is doing. Whilst we can call them at portfolio level, and yeah, as it marginally comes under Department of Art and Culture, is there any thinking of trying to amend, putting a sponsor of amending the constitution, so that they account to Department of Arts and Culture, or a better way of them accounting, holding them to account in terms of promoting the indigenous languages, which then goes back to provinces to say, we have the provincial boards, but if I can say, Gauteng has a lot of universities. Students coming from all over coming to Gauteng, and Gauteng does not have a unique language. The language is from Cairo to Cape to Cairo. So you will never know which university must promote which language, but at least there must be one African language, whether in UJ or verse or whatever. Let me talk about Gauteng. So we don't see that drive, which then will go to Department of Arts and Culture working together with the higher Minister of Higher Education in terms of why university be seen to be promoting an African language. And so that we don't even, the take is, we know it's Afrikaans, versus English, but we don't know which one can promote any African language. So the pace of PENSARP leaves much to be desired, nationally and provincially, and in this board, they draw a lot of public funds with no clear outcome. So as I talk to universities, it also goes to the FET colleges. To say in the FET colleges, also Gauteng is the province that has a lot of FET colleges. We then have to see the African languages, because you have in the FET, you have students that are workers that are have dropped out from a very low standard. So, and they, when they go to FET college, they fail because of medium of instruction. They can't relate to what they're doing at work and what they learn because of the medium of instruction. Thank you.
Chair, I just want to confine my question in the first presentation. Maybe if given a chance in the second round, I'll speak on languages, maybe. Not sure. Chair, One is on the infrastructure project 2010-2011, but in the Northwest Province. I want to speak on two projects. I did raise this question in a previous meeting. I don't remember in last year's meeting, the Department of Arts and Culture, about a library that was intended, or a project that was set out to be built in Makwasi Hills, that library, which we were told were amounting to 5.1 million. I asked last year, I'm just repeating that again, where is that library? Where is the report about it? Because in all the document, there's no such library. Last time the department said, when they come in, they will present and show us where the library is, to consult with the province. And the other one is on the community library in Buikutso. From where I'm seated, I'm coming from that area. I know that the library is a small, it's actually connected, it's a room in a main community hall. But I have never seen any intention or start of a project of building library in that area, in that township. So I want to ask whether is it still coming, is awaiting an approval, or is the project in process? And where is the site? Because I'm sure we're battling to find site. We're actually going up and down asking where the site is to build that library. And
like maybe to assist you, the one of the Kuzo is the one that we just got the report that it will be finished
in April.
And there's a contradiction. I just wanted maybe.
Oh, it's not started. That's what I'm asking.
The report says it will be completed
in April.
In March, actually.
That's what
it says that, you know, the reports, there's a lot of. That is, as I said, you know, my wish was to have the province of here. Thank you,
Chair. That's what I want to find out. What is the progress, you know, in terms of the agreement and all those things? Because it's here, we find it here, even the following year. And the other question, Madam Chair, through you, I want to check how and whose responsibility it is to deal with provinces who do not of an account on funds transferred to the municipalities. So I want to check that, because you would find that, in fact, part of the report that we got was that the department in the Northwest Province transferred the money to the municipality, and they said, no, I've given them the money, so it's my responsibility. I want to check who's monitoring that. And lastly, Chair, on your module, you spoke on the staff turnover. That versus the skill shortages. I want to check, what do you mean by staff turnover? You mean reskilling the staff, or you mean redeploying your staff? And what do you do about to address the shortage of staff in the department, maybe in provinces and maybe in the entire department? The last question is on the public works. Chair, there was a very interesting noting here that, yes, and the understanding that the public works deals with maintenance and tender processes of this infrastructure. It's their prerogative, as the department has reported. But what I want to find out, doesn't the department give them the specification of what they want, how the library should look like, and so on and so on, and then verify the processes of the Department of Public Works? If they go through the tender processes, they finish the reporting, then department verify those processes so that both the Public Works and the Department of Arts and Culture, in terms of the owners of the buildings there, they are able to verify for sure that the process went well, that the maintenance, as they said, they must be done in library, went well. Those verification processes, it shouldn't be given, you know, in a blueprint to the Department of Public Works that they must see to finish with that, with such processes. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Blackie. Before I hand to the department, acting DG, where I'm seated, I'm asking myself, do the department have a proper monitoring mechanism? You know why I'm asking myself that? From the input, you resisted that you set quarterly meetings where you get reports. You presented a report which, personally, where I'm seated, is the opposite of what is happening on the ground. I want to be specific. This Northwest, I'm not impressed with the 75.5 spending, because the question is, do we get the value for the money? I had two meetings with two municipalities. If you monitor the spending pattern, you find that towards the third quarter, the spending will be low. Towards the end of the financial year, your province will be maybe at 85, 87. You ask yourself, how is it possible? But the reason is simple. It's dumping of funds from the provinces to the local municipalities. From the meeting that we had, what came out is that, you know, during that time, the provinces will just dump the money to the local municipality, where the local municipality has not even have a site, you know, for the library. It's a process to get a site. No survey done, no consultant appointed. You know, tender processes are not done. But it will reflect as a spending, which at the actually, there's no spending. That money was not dumped into the municipality. And this causes a problem for the municipalities that you find a situation now, the municipality is having money, which they don't know what to do with that money. And they find themselves sometimes being trapped to use that money for other issues. That is why I'm asking myself that, do the department have a proper monitoring mechanism, or do you only depend on written reports or in boardroom meetings where we sit and we just get reports? When we started, and it's something that department is aware that, we are here, we are representing provinces. We go out, we do oversight, we sit with state officials, we go to the sites. We don't just sit in the meetings like here. The issue of Bikuzo. The report is nice, but for someone who knows the area, who comes from Bikuzo, for someone who comes from Swazreneke, Ipeleche, where there's this thing, the allegation that the municipality has spent 5 million. But, you know, when you get and sit with the officials, the MM, they will give you that yes, this money was transferred to us. But it was just transferred because this was the end of the financial year. And we have not done anything about that fund. And then National comes here and gives us a nice, a rosy report. I don't even want to interact, you know, too much into this. But I'm going to request the department, the National Department, to do something, maybe to change the way you get your reports from the provinces. Because the reality is that what you are giving us here is not what is happening on the ground. It's not what is happening on the ground. Acting DG, I'll invite you. I'll take you to the places where you are in your reports, they're saying there's a library. I'll go and show you.
this is a site where the library that you in your report is saying is complete, but this is the area, there's nothing, there's not even a brick, but this is the library. So I think really we just have to go and change how we do our monitoring. I'm not impressed by this thing of sitting, you know, in meetings, getting reports, but not actually going down to see what's happening. I think I'm going to plead with the department that can we, for this year, please try to change the way we operate. Because really, I don't know what to say, but the reality is that every time when Arts and Culture comes here, I know very well that we are not going to get the correct report. This is, you know, this is something that is with this committee. You know, Arts and Culture is one of the departments that when we call it, we know that we are just going to get the opposite. Can we try to improve? This is my day. I'm not going to say anything. Acting DG, these are the issues. If you want that, we are going to give you the specific and we want you to give us a proper report. Let me give Honorable De Villiers and yourself.
Chairperson, I know that we are running for time now. It's 25 past 12.
No, we are not running. You can...
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. on the presentation of the community library grant, there's no page number, but let me just get there. There's a discrepancy. So the department just have to clear that out for me. Under annual expenditure for 2009-2010. Next to Mpumalanga, 55.956, and there's 57 spent, 57.154, with a percentage of 87.48. So that one, the department just have to clear that one out. Maybe there's some typing fault. Then on the expenditure of 2010 and 2011, if you can just check the spending of the total available money, there's a range between 77% and the lowest one is 34%. Now my question around that is a chairperson, what actually are the department doing, especially around the spending of that money, so that during the year that they assist the different provinces on the spending of that money? That is the monitoring and evaluation which you are talking about. Because we can't get at the end of the year and see that there's only 34.6% spending in that province. Then the upgrading and the building of the new libraries. I'm actually interested in what is the status, and that question you also posed, Honorable Chairperson, in using those libraries which are currently completed by the communities, the community members. So it is not useful to build a new library and the community members don't make use of it, and especially the schools around that vicinity of that new library. And then the lack of capacity about the policy by the different provinces. Now, what currently happened between national and provinces actually to address that capacity lack in provinces by the different staff members or the different sectors in the department to draw up that policy and the assistance from national to the provinces to get to that policy, and that is also what I'm interested in. And the next one is the delay of the jobs. What actually is the problem there by delaying the jobs, the sustainable jobs in the different departments? And the last one, Madam Chairperson, the programs existed to promote and taught the Khoisan, the Nama, and the San languages in the Western Cape or in the Northern Cape. I think that is the provinces which actually have those languages. I'm interested in what programs exist in the different provinces. Because, Madam Chairperson, we must make use of the current resources available to us. There's a lot of problems, and we understand mostly the financial side is the huge problem in addressing the libraries in the different provinces. But what actually is the department doing in assisting the different provinces, how they can make use, the best use of the current resources in those provinces? Thank you, Madam Chairperson.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. Let me start with the delay of the creation of sustainable jobs. That's 2011, 2 years already. Now the decision of cabinet is to have numbers now in terms of how many jobs would Department of Arts and Culture contribute towards this commitment, which also the president taking from the cabinet, the Khoisa to the State of the Nation. So we don't want to, we would want when you present your annual plans to tell us the quantity in terms of how many per province would Arts and Culture contribute. Lastly is the cabinet decision that has not yet been realized, 2007. Deadline next year. I'm not sure what are the powers and the status of MIMEC. I'm not sure how, at what intervals does MIMEC sit. The question of it goes back to the monitoring and evaluation at the national level. I'm not sure what are the powers of MIMEC. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson and other members. In preparation for this presentation today, we realized, Honorable Member Mube, that we need to spell out when you put numbers, because that was what was said in the last presentation, that we are presenting to a select committee comprising of members from provinces, and members would therefore be interested to know what province are you talking about. So I would request then my colleague Ubulen, because I'm sure that he would have that information, to indicate the provinces, because we did anticipate that that's what would come out in terms of the upgrading of the libraries, as well as the rollout of the ICT program to the 6 provinces. Which provinces are those? But also, I would request the presenter to take the members through the questions, and Dr. Sukumane will take the members through the questions that relate to language services, and there is also Dr. Jogwini here, who is the chief director in that unit. At the end, I would like to summarize, especially along the lines of what the Honorable Chairperson has indicated, because Honorable Chair, you did say last time as well that we must not come and talk to about a flag in every school, because there's no flag in school. And now you're also talking about something else that is very significant and it's worrying to us as leaders in the department. Let me allow then my colleagues to respond. Also, Honorable Member Plaatje, I'm not putting excuses, but I'm saying that's the advice we gave to colleagues that we presented here, and there were a lot of questions that we asked around, especially issues of libraries. We're going to come and present on community libraries. We need to look at the questions that we had asked the last time and try and prepare ourselves for those apologies that we haven't addressed them.
Yeah. Thank you, DG, and Honorable Chairperson and members. Let me try and go through the questions as they have been raised. But also, I think I need to address the issue of monitoring and evaluation first before I go through the questions. We do indeed, as I indicated, meet with the provinces. But we also do have MNE, you know, support staff who visit the sites where the projects are actually taking place. It's not, we don't really rely only on the meetings and the reports that we get. And it might also happen that some of the information needs to be verified, and I think that we will do that. Going through the list of the questions, from the Honorable Member from the Northern Cape regarding the shifting of funds. This is a conditional grant. It's managed in terms of the Division of Revenue Act, and as a result, it's ring-fence funding. In other words, you may not shift the funds from libraries to languages. But you can, if you experience problems within the library program, you might shift funding. For instance, if you have a problem with, like what the Northern Cape has got now, serious challenges with the Namabib library, they can move it from that particular project to another project, but it must be a library project. So you can't shift funding from libraries to languages, or to heritage, or to any other program within the department, because this is ring-fence funding. It has to be spent on the library program. And I must say we have received a request from the Northern Cape to actually amend their business plan and shift the funding from the Namabib library to other projects within the province. I take the point that we needed to indicate in which province the upgradings took place. I thought it will make the presentations too long, but I do have a list with me of all the upgradings. And most of them actually were in the Eastern Cape in the 2009 and 10 financial year. I can mention the other provinces. Mpumalanga, they upgraded the library in Wesselton, Limpopo in an area called Moruveng, Roseneka, and Groblersdal and Shiloh. In Gauteng, the Randval Library. In Free State is RJR Masia Children's Library and Pahameng Buhlokong Library. And the rest of the projects are basically in the Eastern Cape. With regard to the issue of ICT, I thought I had mentioned the provinces where the rollout of the system is taking place, but they are in the Western Cape. The project has been launched in the Western Cape, here in the city of Cape Town, in the main library, in the Northern Cape as well, Northwest, Mpumalanga, KZ, and the Eastern Cape. Around the issue of the bursary schemes, we do indeed intend to have a national bursary scheme to support the flow of training of students in the library schools. We don't have the bursary scheme as yet, but provinces do support a small number of students to go and study library science. The moving of staff between the provinces, yes, it is correct. As we speak, in some provinces, for instance in Limpopo, the entry level for a librarian is level 6. And in some provinces, they are on level 8. And we've raised this issue with the Department of Public Service and Administration. There was a process that took place to evaluate the job descriptions of librarians and the salary scales. And that process has been completed. We are only waiting for the recommendations. And hopefully those recommendations will ensure that there is some uniformity in the way that librarians are paid, at least at the provincial level. And this has got nothing to do with the disparities of salaries at municipal level. It's only at the provincial level, to make sure that provinces are at least entry level are able to pay librarians on the same scale. The issue of indigenous languages, as I indicated, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, that we do as a library sector, we have republished the indigenous classics, and that's our own way of contributing to multilingualism. And we've got copies here for the members to see what books have been published in what language. And the members will be able to see that. The issues from Northwest. I must admit that I mean, there might be a need to actually verify the information that we have. I remember that the issue that has been raised with the department previous time was the issue of Khanalakhte Library. And we, from where I'm sitting, we have discussed with the province and we have sorted the issue of Khanalakhte out in that we are planning to build a new library in that particular community. I would need to consult with the province around Makwasi and Makwasi Hills, as well as Wikuzo. I didn't indicate that the project was going to be completed before the end of March. I indicated that the projects are in various stages. And I think it might actually be that it is only through, maybe Wikuzo is only through the tender process as we speak. But I would request to talk to the province and also to other stakeholders concerned in this regard. The funds transferred to municipalities, yes, Honorable Chair, you're quite right. Some provinces do transfer funding to municipalities, but I would be very surprised if they do it towards the end of the financial year, because we, as well as the National Treasury, have always advised provinces that if you intend, and in fact it is a requirement in the law, that if you intend to transfer funding to municipalities, those funds must be published in the Provincial Gazette. And at the beginning of the financial year, they must be published so that municipalities are aware of what funds are coming to them. So if a province transfers funding to a municipality towards the end of the year, I would really be very, very, very concerned, because that they are not supposed to do that. I've spoken to the issue of staff turnover, and regarding the issue of infrastructure and public works, as I indicated, Honorable Chair and members, this is an issue that we are trying to look at on an ongoing basis. I indicated that it presents problems And it is this relationship that between the provincial department as well as the provincial Department of Public Works. Because the Public Works Department indeed do appoint consultants. They have to approve the architectural plans, and they have to appoint contractors for a project. And we find that although we are trying to sit with them perhaps a year in advance, there are always challenges around this relationship. And we did ask the National Treasury. They've got a unit called Technical Assistance Unit, and they made a presentation on infrastructure to provinces, which we facilitated. And I think on an ongoing basis, we will try and streamline processes. But I must indicate and admit that this is an area where most of the blockages are. I think I've spoken to the issue of the spike in expenditure towards the end of the financial year and the dumping of funds at local government level. Once again, I think I would actually be concerned about that. On the issue of monitoring evaluation, I also must say that we will also maybe review our capacity at national level and try and see whether we actually are fully capacitated or not to actually monitor and implement this project. Regarding the expenditure of Mpumalanga, I did not indicate here that actually the annual expenditure figures included the rollovers. I think that is just an omission in our part, that we should have indicated provinces that received rollovers for the previous financial year. How do you assist provinces? Again, we've got the National Treasury, and they've got the Technical Assistance Unit. They are able to go into provinces and assist provinces, for instance, on streamlining procurement procedures. And we have done it with the Eastern Cape. We've also done it with Limpopo and so on. We can recommend to the National Treasury to say, please, can you work with this province, because there seems to be serious challenges. On the issue of schools, most of the consumers of the public library is the schools and the learners. And we do encourage the partnership between the schools and the community libraries. In some provinces, like in Gauteng, there is a memorandum of understanding between the provincial education department as well as the provincial department of arts and culture, to facilitate the working together between the schools and the community libraries. As a community library sector, we do understand clearly that we will not survive without the learners. And in fact, most of the community libraries are actually buying curriculum support materials. In KZN, they have a focused sort of attention even on tertiary students. Through the community library network, they are buying material that is relevant for distance tertiary students who are in KZN. So this partnership is being promoted, and we understand that with limited resources, that's the only way to go. I think I've covered the questions that relate to library issues. I think the issue of jobs being delayed was addressed to languages. Thank you very much, Chair and DG.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think Honourable Saiti had asked the responsibility, whose responsibility it is to deal with the non-transfer of monies by provinces to municipalities. But I think we covered where we say there's a government survey that goes out that indicates
who and when those transfers are going to take place. With your permission, Chair, I'll give over to Honorable yourself, Honorable. So, Dr. Sukumane and Dr. Chukwesi, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, DG. Let me begin with the last questions first. And I want to bundle them together. We are seeing the job delay issue in the context of the creation of sustainable jobs, and saying that the provinces that are not that are not, for some reason or another, able to create units that are dedicated to language specifically, it is in itself a delay. It is a delay also in the context of developments around the issue of legislation. As you know, perhaps you are aware that we haven't had the language legislation for a while. And in 2004, Cabinet decided that let the department explore, along with the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, possible other ways of ensuring that the policy is implemented effectively in lieu of legislation. Because for one thing, they seem to have been convinced at the time that capacity needed to be built first. In light of what Honorable Ngube has just highlighted about the issues around language study, language research, everything to do about language learning and teaching, those challenges. That on the ground, if you have a language unit that's fully functional, you would need people that are properly qualified and equipped to do the work. Now, if you were to push legislation ahead of all of that, obviously government would have run into serious problems. And from that time onwards to the present moment, the department has been trying to do that, striving to do that. And in 2004, then, a language bursary scheme was put in place to train language practitioners. And we have worked with varying institutions of higher learning across the country to produce undergraduate, postgraduate in language practice in these fields that are necessary to run this unit. And now that that scheme has been ongoing since 2004, and these graduates are being prepared, when actually there's a backlog, if you look at what developments are taking place on the ground in terms of the cabinet decision to establish independent, fully-fledged language units to take care of this work, that's lagging behind. In that sense, then, if you are looking to every unit, every government department, provincially and locally, including nationally, actually, if they had responded and if they would have been able to respond, and the deadline was given then for 2012, and really none, most of these people have not really managed to do that, you can imagine then, if it had been possible, how many jobs would have been created by now. And it is in that sense that we're talking language. And DAC, DG, is aware also, and Chairperson, select committee members, Honorable, that different provinces have different challenges that, as I've said before, the Department of Arts and Culture cannot necessarily speak to in an effective way. Issues of capacity at that level, various reasons, budget, infrastructure. And so the delays are there. But then as you're hearing, the department is preparing capacity, and we have been since 2004. And now I want to couple that with your last question about what provinces are busy on NAMA. I didn't mention the Western Cape,
And I take that from what they have reported when the selective committee spoke to us about the request. The Western Cape in particular seems to be very busy around here in the Western Cape. They have been doing writing workshops since 2007. And they have had a writer's symposium in 2010 where they were creating awareness around Braille. But they also have produced, they say, a basic introduction to NAMA in CD form that to address literacy levels in the communities. So it would seem that they are very active in the communities. That I do not want to say if it's Khayelitsha or Guguletu or something, but I'm aware that as a unit they are reaching out, and they have created the CD book, and they are claiming a Teach Yourself NAMA that they have produced in 2010, and there were no real details given then. We should have, if we had been given time to go back to find that. So they are busy in that, and their aim is to enhance skills in the languages and literacy and create, you know, awareness around NAMA. That's what they have said. And so since that initiative, they have given out at least about 178 certificates in NAMA and certificate in isiXhosa and Afrikaans. For that one is about 45 graduates. And that's what they are doing around these three languages, isiXhosa, NAMA, and Afrikaans are dominating their advocacy. They also have a supporting and promoting group in the community that interrogates the issues of NAMA against Akan. Then in 2009, I think that booklet that they produced in 2010 was a result of a conference that they had to create that awareness around NAMA again, to evaluate in that conference what the levels of awareness about this language were in the community that they're working with. And then they've also have a newspaper that I think it's in Afrikaans, the Eland, that they have columns running and publishing the history of the NAMA language, and they've been doing that for quite a while. So far they've had 7 articles detailing the course of publication and instruction materials that have resulted out of that. And they are saying they have done about 50 workshops around that issue. So that's the Northern Cape and the Western Cape. Are we done? Thank you. Thank you, ma'am. I'll ask Dr. Jogan to talk around the issue of pencil.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you very much, Madam Chair, honorable members, DG, ladies and gentlemen, Sanborn, Rhea Medach, Gantinedi. I'll be very brief, Madam Chair, because the issue that I want to raise, which of course has come from your side, as honorable members, is very important. The issue of PENSALP being a constitutional body, as we understand it, and it has got its own act. So what we think should be happening is a strategic intervention at the political level. I think that is very important because it will really necessitate the amendment of the Act. But at the same time, it is very important for the department from our side to inform the honorable members that at the operational level, we are working together with PENSALP. PENSALP is a member of the National Language Forum that my colleague referred to. In all those forums, we get together with all the provinces, the other units in the National Department of Government as well.
So that strategic intervention at the political level, I think it is very important, and as part of our recommendation, we'll be happy if you could assist us also in that regard. But lastly, Honorable Chair, I just want to allude to the issue of the cabinet decision that Honorable Nube raised before she left, to say that there is a deadline which my colleague mentioned, which is 2012, and which is around the corner. But the specific question was, what is the department doing to ensure that those departments are going to meet this deadline? But I just want to say that there were specific departments in that July cabinet decision of 2005, and they were all written to. So there is an intervention from the department. There has been communication, formal one, from the DG of the Department of Arts and Culture to all government, I mean, departments affected, reminding them of this. And I'm happy to report that they have responded very positively, so much so that right now we've met with quite a number of them. They have made significant progress. They may have not really reached the same level in terms of having the fully established language departments, but they have all made a very good start. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable members, Honorable members spoke about the unintended consequence of our democratic dispensation around the issue of language. She spoke at length about the status of African language teachers and how they are perceived and construed. I think perhaps I just want to say that even from our level, perhaps we need to, what do they say, walk the talk. I would have spoken brilliantly if I were to speak in Isixhosa here, because I have to think in Isixhosa and translate into English, and I know if Honorable Sivilias were to speak in Afrikaans,
yes,
I would be lost. Yeah. So I think as in our political principles, they could assist, you know, when we address rallies and we address, we speak in this Queen's language, and the Queen is smiling up in Buckingham Palace because we are promoting her language. But, yeah. I'd like to, if you give me the opportunity, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, to thank you for calling us and asking us to present to you what we have done in this area. But also, perhaps, just to say that I'm sure you could call PENSA as the Select Committee and ask them to account as well. And we would welcome that opportunity. We would also come and be part of that. But I also have taken note and what you had raised, Honorable Chair, that we need to do some roadshow, get out of our offices and chairs and go out there and see what is happening. And that was also raised by the Auditor General with regard to another program, Investing in Culture, where we give money for projects, to say that we need to do that in monitoring and evaluation, go and visit those projects. So we've taken note of that suggestion and the road shows. We have brought you some flags to promote our flag and our national symbols. We would have failed in our duty if we don't do that. But I promise you, we've noted that we need to ensure that those flags are put up in those schools. At the moment, it's about 3,000 schools out of 20-something thousand schools that are there. We will work on that. Thank you.
Acting DG, I reckon the Shono, little translate the Kotok, Honorable De Villiers, I'm good with one leg out, the Tisaka was a little good.
Excuse me, Madam Chair.
Get that to me, call the book. department of the thing, but the first of the library. Already when we talk about this community libraries, school libraries, like Professor, it is clearly indicated that the audit that we are doing, you know, we just look at the structure, but we don't look at the actual. And the issue of the location of the site, are they really accessible to our communities? These are the issues that really suggest that, you know, when we sit with the provinces, those are the issues that we really have to look into, you know, as guiding principles, you know, guidelines to them, that we shouldn't just build a library which is not accessible, which doesn't even have the necessary equipment, and then expect people to make use of that. On that note, I thank everybody, and the meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.